You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
For holy days on which we recall the old stories, we light the flame. For Passover, which reminds us of the courage and strength of those seeking freedom in the past, we light the flame. For Easter, which reminds us that love is the greatest challenge, we light the flame. For gathering today in this sacred space, we light the flame. For the opportunity to be together as a community, to remember the past, to plan for the future, and to be alive in our present. Welcome. Now, I'm going to start today with a reading, and it comes from a long time ago. Sophia Farr's revolutionised Sunday Club or Sunday School for Young Unitarians. So I thought it'd be interesting to say what she had to say about Easter. And this is how it goes. Jesus was a great teacher. He taught we should care for the poor and forgive people who hurt us. In his lifetime, he influenced many people to love one another as they loved God. 12 of those people were called the apostles, and they travelled with Jesus and listened to him preach day after day. In Jesus' time, the Roman leaders and the Jewish leaders didn't like him. They were afraid that he would lead a rebellion and upset the way things were. As Jesus became more popular, the leaders planned to kill him, and one of the disciples, called Judas, helped the leaders with their plan. The night before Jesus died, he was celebrating the Jewish holiday of Passover. He celebrated at a seder with the 12 disciples, and the next day he was arrested and then he was killed. What happened after Jesus died began the religion we know as Christianity. Many Christians believe that after Jesus was killed, he rose from the dead and went to heaven. The Reverend Fars told it another way. The people who followed Jesus were broken-hearted after he died. They struggled to understand why God allowed their teacher to be killed. Surely someone so connected to God, so overflowing in goodness, didn't deserve the punishment of a criminal or rebel? As these men and women gathered day after day in each other's homes and began to recall the wonderful experiences they'd had with Jesus, they told one another of the times when Jesus was wise and times when he was kind, and the very tone of his voice and look on his face would come to them so vividly that it seemed sometimes that he were right there with them again. Some of these people had dreams in which Jesus seemed so real that the dreamers could not tell whether they had been asleep or awake when they saw him. Some declared positively they'd seen Jesus again. He'd talked with them. The rumour spread that Jesus had actually come out of his coffin, that two of his disciples had seen him, and that several women had talked with him. They would see him only for a few moments, and then he would mysteriously vanish again. Finally, several of them dreamed they saw Jesus rise up from the earth, higher and higher, until he disappeared entirely. They believed he'd gone to heaven to be with God, and after that, their dreams of seeing him and talking with him stopped. People who had these experiences believed Jesus was different from other people. Some believed Jesus was so holy and great that he would come back to earth and save the world, and that's one reason Christians call Jesus the Saviour. The years passed by. The people who knew Jesus died. Their children and their children's children also died, but Jesus didn't come back. It's been over 2,000 years and Jesus has not come back. There are those who still hope he will come back to life again. Others, including Unitarian Universalists, believe that this Jesus will never again live on earth. His body is not coming back, but his spirit never needs to die. His spirit is in his words and deeds, which give us wisdom today. For example, when he was alive, he taught the golden rule: treat others the way you want to be treated. He gave the Sermon on the Mount and said that people who are poor, hurt, and struggling are loved by God, and therefore we must love them too. When someone's physical body dies, the people around them who loved and valued them will keep their memory alive, just like the followers of Jesus have remembered his teachings and his spirit long after his death. And that was quite revolutionary to teach children in 1945. I think before then, the little Unitarian kids got very similar readings that Salvation Army, Methodist, or anybody else would get. Now, it comes to that time in the service where we light candles of joy, concern, or inspiration. Would you like to light that candle for the art group? That would be a lovely way to start it. And now, if we've got anybody else who would light a candle today, please come and do so. The last candle is for those thoughts that remain silent in our hearts and are very dear to us. We're going to have a little time where we go within. I have a short meditation called the Easter Baskets Meditation, and that will be followed by an interlude, again from the King James Bible Oratorio, and it's called Blessed. Let us imagine for a moment that our lives are like the baskets that children use to collect Easter eggs and gifts. Welcome that imaginative connection. May the things you collect in your basket, like flowers, bring you a new appreciation of beauty. May the things that you collect in your basket, like chocolate, bring your life sweetness. May your basket always be full enough that you are able to share your bounty with others, especially those whose baskets do not contain as much. May your basket be large enough to accept the occasional disappointment. May your life, like the egg before it is opened or the ribbon before it is untied, offer up new surprises that bring joy. And finally, may your life, like the reeds of the basket, be interwoven with others, partaking in a community to celebrate all that is good. In the spirit of the little things that offer to us cherished meanings, may our lives indeed be blessed. This year, Passover and Easter coincide. Last year it didn't. Easter was in March and Passover was in April. But this year is truly remarkable. Passover, Ramadan and Easter all fall in April. A coincidence that only happens every 33 years because the Ramadan cycles through the whole year, whereas Easter and Passover are anchored to spring. The equinoxes and solstices tend to attract religious celebrations. Each year, with the start of spring, come ideas surrounding new life, rebirth, and growth. And of course, we don't have the spring association in Australia, but our autumn is a time for planting because our winter's mild, and on our little patch of the planet, it's when the rain comes. While each religion and holiday is based in a different tradition and belief, they all share some common themes and are linked in some interesting ways. Passover is the oldest tradition of the three and represents a renewal of Jewish identity. The story traces the rescue of Hebrew people from slavery in the Egyptian Empire. comes from the book of Exodus. The story goes that God claimed that the firstborn of all Egyptians, and that the Hebrew people avoided that fate by putting the blood of a lamb on the doorframe, and that meant the angel of death would go over the top. Now, Seder is the ritual and ceremonial meal celebrated on the first and second days of the Passover festival, which began on Friday the 15th and will end on Friday the 22nd of April this year. Seder is a home ritual blending religious rituals, food, song, and storytelling. The focal point of the whole event is the Seder plate. It contains roasted shank bone, symbolizing the sacrifice of the lamb, maror, bitter herbs, to represent the bitter experience of being slaves, haraset, a mixture of apples, nuts, raisins, spices, and wine, that represents the mortar for the buildings that they did for the Egyptians, egg for spring, and karpas, that's parsley and celery, symbolizing the green of spring. The table must also carry matzah, which is the unleavened bread, because you don't have time when you're going to make a dash for freedom to wait for the bread to rise. The Last Supper was a Passover Seder meal that Jesus and his disciples ate to celebrate this event. Jesus taught his disciples that the wine and bread at the meal signified that he would become the sacrificial lamb by which sins are forgiven and reconciliation with God can occur. The aspects of Easter that separate Unitarians from their Christian roots are the bodily resurrection of Jesus from the dead and the idea that Christians are forgiven because of the sacrifice of Jesus. Now, Jesus' death that allowed the angel of death to pass over Christians in the story, in the same way as blood on the doorpost does with Passover. Easter is preceded by Lent, a 40-day period where Christians prepare for Easter. And today this tradition most often comes with Christians giving up a vice, chocolate, fast food, social media. This individual sacrifice is designed to remind the Christian about the sacrifice that God made for them. But of course, the rules around Lent were traditionally much stricter than that. In the early centuries, the fasting rules were strict, as they still are in Eastern churches. One meal a day was allowed, and that was in the evening. Meat, fish, eggs, butter, forbidden. The Eastern Church also restricts the use of wine, oil, and dairy. The older, more traditional restrictions for Lent are much more similar to the Islamic tradition of Ramadan, during which Muslims acknowledge the fourth pillar of Islam, which is to fast throughout an entire month. But of course, that's intermittent fasting, not going without food for a month. So they fast during the daylight hours. Like the sacrifice of a vice during Lent, fasting during Ramadan serves to allow a Muslim to focus their attention on the deep commitment they've made to submit every aspect of their life to the will of Allah, and to give themselves time to meditate on that commitment due to the constant reminder of it via their hunger. The second component of the fast has to do with the social component of Ramadan, which is to remind a Muslim what it's like to experience hunger and not have enough food. This builds solidarity with those in the Islamic community who regularly don't have enough to eat. There's a very strong community focus in Islam that's a little different to Christianity, which is more individualistic. Whereas Christianity is about the individual saving of a soul from hell, in Islam it's about building a community of faithful people who are obedient to the will of Allah. In the evenings, Muslims feast, breaking the fast with dates and then hoeing into kibbeh, stuffed vegetables and all sorts of other lovely traditional foods. While each of these holidays has a different religious significance to their practitioners, they all serve as a reminder to the followers of each religion of their commitment to their faith and to the God they worship. It's a time for people of each religion to become renewed, and the theme is aligned with the season. The closeness of our holy days should remind us of our connection to each other, the ways in which stories overlap and cultures. You may wonder how holy our holy days really are in the West. Thus saith the great merchandisers of our time, Cadbury, Lindt, Red Cacao, Nestle, Brace Girdles. Now, of course, some Christians ignore all that and celebrate Passover with the lamb, the bitter herbs, the flatbread, and in some traditions, the ceremony includes washing each other's feet, as Jesus did for his disciples the night he suffered. Now, when Joe Lane was the minister here, we had a Seder meal one Good Friday here in the meeting house, and the story was told between courses, you know, the Exodus story. And for the record, we did do the foot washing. But we have done foot washing at the end of pilgrimages we used to do back in Mark Allstrom's time. We'd walk from Shady Grove, leaving there at 7:30 in the morning, and get here 4:30. And foot baths and soup were very welcome. Now, Unitarians don't have Easter rituals apart from those common to secular and religious families, for that matter. Hot cross buns, Easter eggs, maybe joint social action demo on Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter, or a concert or choral service, if sacred music is your thing. Easter music is not jolly. St. Matthew's or St. John's Passion, Bach, Handel's Messiah, Stabat Mater, Pergolesi, Ave Pet, Messiaen, Poulenc, Mozart, Haydn. If you don't care for that heavy-duty classical stuff, there are no jolly Easter carols. Now, you can look for them online, and you can find them, but they're kind of fake. You get things like Little Easter Rabbit instead of Little Peter Rabbit Has a Fly Upon His Nose. I mean, that's a bit of a stretch, isn't it? But that's as good as it gets. Yet Good Friday is the quietest day of the year. Bunnings is closed. It's a good day to spend with yourself. No business to be done. Even the Easter family gatherings tend to be scheduled in for Saturday, Sunday or Monday. Now, what I did, I listened to St. Matthew's Passion and did a bit of watering, and then I decided I'd better get on and finish the address for Sunday. And I came across Paul Stefan Dordenhoff's Why I Celebrate Easter. He's one of the two UU ministers of the Church of the Palisades in New Jersey, and they've been doing Zoom services throughout the pandemic. His service today, which is running now, is titled Every Day a Resurrection, and what I am going to read you is what he had to say to publicise today's service. People ask me why I celebrate Easter, even though I'm not a Christian or a believer in the physical resurrection of Jesus. I celebrate because I believe it to be a spiritual metaphor. One of the most powerful and heartening of spiritual metaphors for our own apotheosis and resurrection to a new life. Every day offers us yet again the chance to experience our own divinity and spiritual transformation. The stone is rolled away and the tomb is left empty every time we acknowledge our own Christ reality, or whatever name you choose to use, and the Christ reality of all beings and all things as part and parcel of the ultimate divine mystery in which we live and move and have our being. To do that, we must die to our own small, petty ego selves, which is a difficult and often painful process. That, I believe, is the inner meaning and spiritual work of Good Friday, a good day to reflect and to consider our own need to die to self, not in sorrow, but in anticipation of what's to come. Now, Christ reality would be called bodhisattva in the Buddhist tradition. A bodhisattva doesn't sit in a dissociated state of blissful elevation above the world. The path of the bodhisattva is heart-centered devotion and compassion. It's a path of courageously embracing the storms and existential voids of life, the pain and the mess. A bodhisattva is a person who delays enlightenment in order to help all living beings achieve liberation or nirvana. Now, only some of us feel a strong calling to help, guide, or uplift others. Only some of us feel intense pain for the suffering of the planet, plants, animals, ecosystems, and humanity. Only some of us are generous and devotional people by nature. Only some of us have undergone some kind of a spiritual awakening. Some of us find the path of heartfulness is more appealing than the path of mindfulness. But all of those us's include more than a few of you sitting here today. As Unitarians, we embrace the idea that deep down inside us there is good. And as ordinary human beings, we sometimes yearn for transformation, particularly when bad habits overwhelm us, despite our best efforts to clean up our act. Procrastination? Rising to the bait and getting snappy? Not exercising? Eating too much of the foods we know will pay us out? Drinking or gambling or drug taking can be awful traps. The wish to do this or refrain from doing that can be beyond the resources afforded by sheer willpower. We want to feel different. We want to be motivated to act differently and change. And in order to do that, we need to turn within and spend some time working out where we're coming from. What drives our self-sabotage? What habits do we need to change? What thought processes do we need to abort? Self-flagellation, for one. Our spiritual practice can help. If you find introspection, prayer, or meditation daunting, you can be quite practical and pragmatic about getting started. It might simply be a matter of setting the bar low enough. 20 minutes? Impossible! 10 minutes? Bit daunting. So start with one. Then you might repeat it and do another one, and another one, and another one. The Easter season is about Jesus, and no matter what you believe about him as a historic figure or as a mythic figure, he did set a very high bar as far as love is concerned. Love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no one than this, that you lay down your life for your friends. Thou shalt love thy neighbour as thyself. For what are we profited if we gain the whole world and lose our own souls? Or what should one give in exchange for one's soul? Love one another as I have loved you. How did the journey start? With baptism in the River Jordan, a Jewish ritual purification, the washing away of sins. But of course the Jews didn't use the word baptism because that's a Christian concept. But it was the act of immersion in naturally sourced water. What is really intriguing is how the Christian ritual reenacts the Jewish purification ritual. Yet what John the Baptist said was, "One is more powerful than I am, is coming after me. I'm not worthy to bend down and untie the strap of his sandals. I baptize you with water, but he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit." And that is transformation. And that doesn't actually happen in Christian churches, apart from some of the non-mainstream ones like Church of Christ. They don't allow infant baptism. You have to feel that you're transformed and found the Lord and that sort of thing. In our Unitarian church, we don't call the ceremony baptism. We have a naming ceremony, and they're usually crafted by parents, the congregation's minister, and sometimes even the religious educator, David Freesmith, at the moment in our church. And a naming ceremony contains a blessing for the new life of the child, an expression of the parent's hopes, and a promise by the congregation to support and nurture the child. So that's how we've virtually changed this. But in the Bible, there's this reference to being baptized, and it's one that very few Christians have ever picked up. You'll be baptized with the Holy Spirit. Now, what Jesus did was to cut through rules and regulations. Throughout his 3-year short ministry, the priests tried to catch him out with dilemmas like, what would you do if an ox or an ass fell down a well, when according to Jewish law, you may not lift a finger on the Sabbath? And he didn't fall for that. Instead, he cut through the nonsense with some vital new overarching principles. It's the spirit and not the letter of the law that counts. Love one another and judge not. So, happy Easter, everyone. It is the time to remember Jesus, the great teacher, even if we're a bit out of step with other faith traditions. I've got a benediction here, closing words for Easter, and the words are from Alex Holt. You may stand if you're able. For all those who celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, may this day be another affirmation of divine love and promise. For those who see the eternal story of new autumn and life beginning anew, may you breathe deeply of a season of promise and hope. For all who are experiencing despair or hopelessness this Easter, may you find in the darkness or depression a doorway to light and warmth that offers you freedom. For all of us, together we can do what no isolated person can do. Rolling the heavy stone aside reminds us we are more powerful than we could ever be on our own. Our offering of strong hands to help a good will be made real. Let's begin again to love.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.